Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. Feel free to download these audio files and share them with your friends and family. Please consider joining Beth Emmanuel's virtual community and support our efforts for the kingdom by clicking on the Donate tab at BethEmmanuel.org.
So we finished the book of Bereshit, the book of Genesis today, and I thought, just for fun, we would study a verse from the book of Genesis. We learn one verse from today's Parsha. It's Genesis 49:10, which is from the blessings that Jacob spoke over the tribes, over his 12 sons. It's specifically from the blessing over Judah. So we're going to study just one verse, just this one verse from the Torah portion, a verse that all of the sages seem to agree is a prophecy of the coming of the Messiah. In fact, it's considered to be the most important prophecy about the coming of the Messiah in the entire Torah. So I thought that since we tend to be interested in messianic stuff here, we should learn this verse. All right, so here's the verse as it appears in the English Standard Version. It says, "The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until Shiloh comes," is how it should say, but the ESV says, "until tribute comes to him." We'll figure out why they translate it that way. "Until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the peoples." Shiloh. Interesting title of Messiah, Shiloh, Shiloh. It's an unusual name, hard to figure out what it means. But in this verse, Jacob prophesies that the monarchy would arise from the tribe of Judah, from his son Judah's family. And when the Torah says, "The scepter shall not depart from Judah," this is the first thing we want to learn. We are to understand that scepter, I suppose, as a symbol for kingship. You know, a scepter represents a king, a monarch's authority. It's kind of like a crown. But the Hebrew word translated scepter here is shevet. Shevet. The word has two common meanings. It's commonly used to denote a staff or a rod or a scepter, basically some kind of striking implement. But it's also the common word for tribe. So it has a double meaning. The double meaning of the word works in the prophecy to imply that the royal tribal status will not depart from Judah. So remember how Judah used his staff back in Genesis 38 as collateral and a token of his identity in the story of Tamar? Well, the sages understood Judah's staff as alluding to King Messiah, it says in the Midrash Rabbah. The staff of Judah alludes to King Messiah, as it says in Psalm 110. Psalm 110 being an important psalm to our apostles, isn't it? "The Lord will stretch forth your strong staff," your strong shevet, your strong scepter from Zion, saying, "Rule in the midst of your enemies." So here's another passage. This is from the Midrash Rabbah as well. This is from Genesis Rabbah, where basically commenting on the verse that says, "The scepter shall not depart from Judah." It says, this refers to the throne of kingship. How do we know? Because it's written in Psalm 45, verse 6, "Your throne, O God, is forever and ever. A scepter, a shevet of uprightness, is the scepter of your kingdom." Then the sages ask, when will this verse be fulfilled? When will this happen? And the answer, when Messiah comes. You know, I always like to look in the Targums to see how the Targums handled the text when I have a question, to see what the, because the Targums are like the living version of the first century, you know, so they tell us what the standard interpretation back in those days was. So I look into Targum Pseudo-Yonatan on Genesis 49:10. It's the Aramaic version. And here's how Genesis 49:10 gets translated by the Aramaic. It says, "Kings and rulers shall not cease from those of the house of Judah." And there's several other passages that use this scepter imagery to establish the monarchy, to establish the kingship. For example, how about Psalm 2? Psalm 2 is a major messianic psalm, very important to our apostles. They quote it quite a bit, but also very important to the sages whenever discussing the coming of Messiah. And it says in Psalm 2, beginning in verse 7, I will tell of the decree the Lord said to me. This is the voice of the Messianic king speaking. He says, the Lord said to me, you are my son. Today I have begotten you. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your heritage, the ends of the earth your possession. You shall break them with a shevet of iron, a rod of iron, and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. So here again, we see the shevet, the rod, the staff, however you want to translate it, connected directly to the Messiah, the coming Messiah, the Messianic King. And so this explains to us a verse from Revelation. Everybody likes to study Revelation. This explains a verse from Revelation. In Revelation 2, it says, the Master, actually, these are the words of Yeshua. He says, the one who conquers and keeps my works until the end, to him I will give authority over the nations, and he will rule them with a rod of iron, as when earthen pots are broken, even as I myself have received authority from my Father. So he promises his faithful that they will share in his authority, in his scepter. In another place in Revelation, in regard to the birth of the Messiah, it says, she, the Israel, gave birth to a male child, one who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron, a scepter, a shevet of iron. And then the child was caught up to the throne and so on. So, therefore, based on what we've learned already, the rod of iron, the shevet of iron, can be understood as a title almost for the Messiah, denoting his authority, primarily his authority over the nations. And when used in this sense, the word shevet is seen as a sort of cudgel. Maybe we could translate it as the cudgel. A cudgel of iron for smiting, an instrument of punishment, an instrument of retribution. So, for example, in Psalm 89:32, the Lord declares of the wicked, then I will punish their transgression with a shevet and their iniquity with stripes. And in the Proverbs, we see the shevet being used in the same sort of sense. I gave you several Proverbs on that handout and just run through them. This one's a famous one. He who withholds the rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. It reminds me of my father when he was a young man. He was being raised by a single mother, of course, because my father's father died when my father was very young. And so his mother was widowed, and so she had these boys to raise. And so if my father would disbehave, she would send him out to the woods to get a shevet. She'd say, go get a switch. It had to be a good one, because if the switch broke, he had to go get a different one. You know, so that's what's going on here. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The shevet of discipline will remove it from him. Or in Proverbs 23, you shall strike him with the shevet and rescue his soul from Sheol. Or in Proverbs 29, the shevet and reproof give wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. However, lest you start to get the wrong idea, the shevet is not only an instrument of retribution, of smashing nations, an instrument of punishment and disciplining children, because in Psalm 23, we read about the shevet of the good shepherd, where it is an instrument of comfort to the flock. Why? Because he can use that shevet to drive off predators, to drive off wolves. So everybody knows this famous psalm. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your shevet and your staff, they comfort me. Your rod and your staff. The prophet Ezekiel uses the imagery too. He says, it says in Ezekiel 20, where he depicts, depicts Hashem standing like a shepherd with a rod extended. He says, I will make you pass under the shevet. I will bring you into the bond of the covenant. It's Messiah's authority over the nations, and the his ability to implement retribution and judgment on the enemies of God and on the enemies of Israel. But for the flock under his care, it is a comfort. And it's an entrance into the bond of the covenant. That's what we read here in Ezekiel. Another famous image comes from the prophecy, the greatest messianic prophecy of the Nevi'im, that the prophets, is Isaiah 11, of course. And in Isaiah 11 we read, "But with righteousness he will judge the poor and decide with fairness for the afflicted of the earth, and he will strike the earth with the shevet of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he will slay the wicked," which is an image picked up by Paul of Tarsus in 2 Thessalonians 2:8, where he tells us that the Torahless one, the lawless one, will be revealed, whom the Lord will slay with the breath of his mouth and bring to an end by the appearance of his coming. The same apocalyptic expectation appears in the book of Revelation, where the Messiah is depicted striking down the nations with a sharp sword that emerges from his mouth, and then he rules over them with a rod of iron. We hear it in Revelation 19. "From his mouth came a sharp sword, so that with it he may strike down nations. He will rule them with a rod of iron. He treads the winepress of the fierce wrath of God the Almighty." Therefore, to say, going back to our original prophecy, to say that the Shevet will not depart from Judah is the same as saying that the messianic office belongs to the tribe of Judah. In the Greek version of the Torah, the Septuagint, it's translated very simply as, "A ruler shall not fail from Judah." So the meaning of the prophecy, again, that kings, the kings of Israel, were destined to come from Judah, and the right to the throne was to remain with that tribe. Therefore, the ultimate king, the Messiah, the ultimate king of Israel, must come from the tribe of Judah. Case closed. It goes on, the prophecy goes on to say, "Nor shall the ruler's staff depart from between his feet." What is a ruler's staff? This is Hebrew parallelism. I think we're hearing the same thing, the shevet, the ruler's staff. But it's a different word in Hebrew. It's a mechokek, which comes from a verbal root chakak, meaning to inscribe, I guess, to inscribe. But and I don't quite understand that. I don't quite understand the word or how it works, mechokek. But it seems to be an emblem of tribal leadership that signifies power and authority. It carries a sense of a lawgiver, in that laws are inscribed edicts, maybe, that's my guess, written in stone, as it were. Furthermore, the Hebrew word for statute is chok, which you can hear that in mechokek. Chok, the statutes. So in Isaiah 32, for example, we read, "The Lord is our judge. The Lord is our mechokek," our lawgiver is how we translate that. Or in Proverbs 8:15, "Wisdom declares, by me men reign and rulers decree," chakak, they decree justice. So the ruler's staff might have been a special inscribed staff. I don't know what it was, to be honest. I have no idea. But it's something that betokened leadership with the authority to make laws, legal authority. The Greek version doesn't even attempt to try to translate this obscure Hebrew word literally. Instead, the Greek version just offers the word prince as a substitute. It says, "The prince shall not depart from him." The Targum translates it as, "A teacher of Torah," mechokek, becomes the teacher of Torah. And all of these, I think, all these shades of meaning apply to the Messiah very well. He's the token of God's legal authority. He's the lawgiver, in that he's the arbiter of Torah, the second Moses. He's the teacher of Torah. He is the prince promised from the tribe of Judah. But what does it mean that it shall not depart from his feet? Well, the Greek version reads this as a euphemism, hence the translation, A ruler shall not fail from Judah, nor a prince from his loins. In other words, the kings of Israel will be descendants of Judah. Okay, what about Shiloh? Let's get back to the Shiloh question. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet until Shiloh or Shiloh comes. Well, we understand the scepter is the monarchy, the house of David, and so on. But what is until Shiloh comes? What does this mean? What is Shiloh? Until Shiloh comes has been almost universally interpreted by traditional Judaism as a reference to the Messiah, or a name of Messiah, or a title of Messiah. In fact, this passage is regarded as the primary proof text for Messiah from the Torah. For example, one school of Talmudic thought understood it as a straight-up name for Messiah. So we read, what is Messiah's name? The school of Rabbi Shila said his name is Shiloh, as it is said, until Shiloh comes. Well, Rabbi Shila thinks that the name should be Shiloh, because that sounds like his name, Rabbi Shila. But anyway, Targum Onkelos paraphrases Shiloh as it saying, until the Messiah comes. Doesn't even try to figure out why we use that title. It just, it means Messiah. Until Messiah comes, for his is the kingdom. That's what the Onkelos says. Yonatan, or pseudo-Yonatan, says, until the time of King Messiah, the youngest of Judah's sons. And the Midrash says, Shiloh alludes to Messiah King. Rashi follows all of these thoughts. He follows this same line of interpretation. And he brings a Midrashic explanation. He says, well, let's look at the word Shiloh. Shiloh is a contraction of the word Shay, which means a gift or homage paid, and the word lo, which means to him. So it's a gift to him comes. And this is what's written in Psalm 76. Let all who are around him bring gifts to him who is to be feared. So that's not actually a very good etymology. And I think Rashi knew that, but he had to report what the Midrash was saying. Alternatively, Sforno understood the word Shiloh to be related to Shalom. Sounds kind of like Shalom. Shiloh, Shalom, Shalom, Shiloh, indicating that the Messiah is the Sar Shalom, the Prince of Peace, who will bring a universal peace to the earth. Tanhuma preserves the opinion that Shiloh is related to Shilya, which means, strangely enough, a birth sack. Indicating, according to Tanhuma, this indicates that the Messiah will be born of a woman. He's not going to beam down, but will be born of a human being, born of a woman. That's another dubious etymology behind it, but it works. However you like, whatever you like. The point is, it's Messiah. The Septuagint version of the Torah translates the phrase, until Shiloh comes, as the things stored up for him. I don't understand why, but the him is clearly Mashiach. The things stored up for him is the right to the throne and the authority over the nations that we've been reading about. So the passage indicates that that David's kingly line will not be extinguished until King Messiah comes and receives all of the things that have been prophesied regarding him, all of the things that belong to him. All right, so we have all these different explanations for Shiloh. And they're very, they're coming from all different sectors and quarters. But the important thing is, regardless of which one is correct, maybe none of them, every commentator agrees that the term somehow denotes Messiah. Finally, one more phrase. It says, and to him, Shiloh, shall be the obedience of the peoples. Rashi reads this as, to him will be a gathering of nations. And the Greek translates it as, he is the expectation of the nations. And the Midrash says, to him the nations of the world will flock, as it says in Isaiah 11, then in that day the nations will resort to the root of Jesse, who will stand as a signal for the peoples, and his resting place will be glorious. This is the prophecy, again, from Isaiah 11. And this reminds me of the words of our master. He says, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, he says. Nations will see and be ashamed. To him shall be the obedience of the peoples. And until that day, he is the hopeful expectation of the nations, as Scripture says in Isaiah 42, and the coastlands will wait expectantly for his Torah. Until then, we long for him. Now, here's the question. Since this is the most important messianic prophecy in the Torah, does it indicate, does it point to in any way our hope and our expectation and our ardent belief that Yeshua of Nazareth is the promised Messiah? And I would say yes. Here's why. The main thrust of the passage is that he is from the tribe of Judah, someone from the tribe of Judah, to whom all nations will resort, will flock, and who will rule all nations. When you put it that way, you can see, you can do a brief historical review in your head and think of all the Jews in history and all the Jewish people specifically from the tribe of Judah and try to figure out which one is fulfilling this prophecy. Ever since the days of the apostles, faith in Yeshua of Nazareth has spread to all nations. He is the signal for the peoples, the nace for the peoples to which they flock, just as the prophecy says. Men and women from every people on earth cast their allegiance with him. No one else in history has accomplished this. Through him, the Torah of God goes out even to the most distant coastlands. As it says, as we read, the coastlands will await his Torah with expectation, it says in Isaiah. There's no one else who comes close to fulfilling this prophecy. So to the objective observer, on the outside, there can be no real question about who fulfills this prophecy. Our Master Yeshua is Shiloh. He is the Messiah.
Take on my yoke and learn from me and find rest for your soul.